QST, QST, QST. This is Tom Fry, KF6Q, with Tech Tuesday group on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater at 1900 hours on Tuesday evenings, every Tuesday evenings, with the weather and safety items permitting. So, before we start, is there any emergency or priority traffic? Please come now. Hearing none, however, if there is any emergency traffic, it is always acceptable to break in at any point in time. Alrighty, WB6CLZ, are you out there this evening?
Yes, good evening, Tom, and everybody on the net that's listening. This is WB6CLZ, and we're standing by.
Alright, Mike, tonight we're going to be talking about quads in our little workshop we had last Sunday, quad antennas, specifically VHF quads, but a lot of it does apply to any size quad, and we're going to get into a little of the nitty-gritty on antennas as far as how that quad works and what it does, and a lot of neat stuff tonight, so probably won't cover it all tonight, so we'll carry it on next week. Anyway, at this point in time, is there anybody who would like to just check in so we can write your name down and put you on the list of listeners? Please come now.
AJ6KDL and KDK.
Jim and Rosemary, glad to have you with us. KJ6KDL and KDK. Is there anybody else out there who would like to check in? Please come now.
KJ6FIL.
Mike, glad to have you with us this evening. Is there anybody else out there? Please come now.
W6JLM and W6KMM.
Ken and Judith, glad to have you with us. W6JLM and KMM. Is there anybody else out there? Please come now.
AJ6PL.
Alrighty, a piece, I always get your call mixed up, AG6PL, is that correct?
Alpha Delta 6 Papa Lima, Harold is the name.
Okay, I'm sorry, I wrote it down before and a D looked like a P or a G, I'm sorry. Harold, glad to have you with us. Anybody else out there, please come now.
W6AWL, listening. Hey, Tom, good evening.
Hey, good evening there, Art. Glad to have you with us, listening in there. Anybody else listening in this evening, please come now.
AF6ZJ, Guy in Roseman.
AF6ZJ, Guy, glad to have you with us. Anybody else out there, please come now. Alrighty, anybody else feel to join at any point in time? Any comments or questions, please jump in there at any point in time. Mike, we're going to talk about this evening with the quad you built. We had probably the roughest antenna workshop with all the weather the way it was. But Mike, you threw together a two-element quad for 2 meter. Give a brief description on physically what that consisted of. Back to you, Mike. WB6CLZ, KF6Q.
Hey, Tom, and good evening to all the listeners out there. Yeah, basically we made a two-element, two-meter quad out of half-inch PVC, 17.5-inch long boom of PVC with a three-quarter-inch T in the center, so we'd have something to mount it on, some way to mount it and balance it pretty close to the center, reduced down on each end of the T so we could put our half-inch PVC boom in it. And then Tom and I had purchased some brother elements, which are basically from a kite manufacturer, a kite part manufacturer, made out of fiberglass rod, quarter inch fiberglass rod, cut those down to the required length, and let's see, driven element 82 and a quarter inches, I think, and the reflector was 86 inches, a little bit of a stub made out of twin lead, and a little, basically a tiny little trimmer capacitor to tune it up, and that's basically it in a nutshell.
Alrighty, that sounds pretty good there, Mike. Good description there. And you got that from an article that you had kicking around or somebody had left there. Pretty neat. So I would say looks like it came out pretty good. How many hours would you say it took you to throw that thing together, not counting coffee breaks?
F6Q in the Tech Tuesday group, WV6CL said, oh, I can't count coffee breaks? Well, I don't know. For the whole thing, start to finish, and including a sip of coffee here, probably an hour to an hour and a half from gluing it together to hooking it up and seeing if it actually would break this repeater.
Yeah, roger that. Yeah, they are pretty simple to assemble, and I would say you could probably build two in the same period that you built one. There isn't a lot to do. As a matter of fact, it's just basically getting everything to function physically together and then working out the little bugs on that. So anyway, yeah, it worked pretty neat, and we tuned that thing up. And I'd say dollar-wise, let's say you had like four spreaders and a couple of PVC parts and a little wire. How much money just dollar-wise? And don't be scrimpy on that.
Boy, well, not counting the coax that we used to feed it, which I got for a dollar at a yard sale. But not counting that, I would say no more than $6, and I'm probably stretching it at that.
Roger that, yeah. And one good part about that, it is directional. And sometimes that's a bad part, but for the best part, it could be used in a little direction finding or fox hunt. And that directional bill, and it's only a little after 7, KF6Q here on the Tech Tuesday group. Must be the almost snow conditions outside. Essentially, because of its directivity, that helps focus gain in one direction, as we call gain. Being that over a basic isotropic radiator, which is an imaginary single-element radiator out there. Mike, did you have any numbers on that? Because I got lots of numbers here.
If you've got the numbers in front of you, I will let you go with it. I do know that the characteristic impedance was 100 ohms, but I'll let you take it if you've got the numbers there. I don't have them in front of me.
Right, and that 100 ohms, of course, that's the loop. And for you out there that are not familiar with a quad, basically it's a square. A wire ran in a square. And in this particular instance, each leg of the square is a little over 20 inches. And he had two of these squares. One, I'm going to say it's approximately, about 18 inches to 2 feet behind it. That dimension is important. But and that back loop is just acts as a reflector. So actually a quad will work with just one loop all by itself. It'll be semi-directional, pretty much pointing in two basic directions, 180 degrees out of, from each other. Anyway, we're going to talk about just a loop real quick, and then we'll get into the loop with the reflector. There is quite a bit of gain over the dipole. Mike, just real quick, J-pole, dipole, pretty much the same. It is the same, except of the physical shape of that J. And, Mike, what's the gain on a dipole over the isotropic?
You wouldn't ask me that. I would say 1.5 dB, something like that. Correct me if I'm wrong.
2.15. You've been corrected. Anyway, So we figure a dipole, which is actually a real antenna. The isotropic is imaginary and actually a gauging point. So we base a lot of stuff off of the dipole, which is 2.15 dB gain. And there's actually a microvolts per whatever associated with that, but the basic dipole is pretty much a reference point. Well, now here comes the good part. Just a loop without that reflector. If you didn't even put the reflector on there, you've basically got 2 dB gain over that dipole, which is basically 160%, 60% increase. Just one loop. Back to you, Mike, real quick.
Oh, that's why my loop antenna works so well. Okay, gotcha. So I see that that's a little bit over 4 dB gain. Is that what you're telling us?
Well, if that would be 4 dB gain, that would be 4 dBi. And here again, we kind of went over this last week. You have to be careful when you look at ratings of an antenna, because dBd and dBi, two entirely different things. One is the gain versus the isotropic or imaginary antenna. Then we have the real world, which is the dipole, and dBd would be over the dipole. So a dipole over itself is basically zero. It's the same as itself. So we've got basically 2 dBd gain over that dipole just with one loop. Now, that's not your antenna yet. You have a reflector.
Roger that. About 17 inches behind that turkey.
Yeah, roger that. Now, the two elements of a quad are, by the way, equal to the gain of a three-element Yagi. Woo-hoo, okay. And that gain is 7.1 to 7.5, depending which math formulas you look at. But just say 7.5 dBd. That's 7.5 dB over the dipole. And what that is realistically is a 500% increase over the dipole, basically five times what a dipole is, as far as signal and everything like that. So that's pretty awesome, I think.
Better than going out and buying an amplifier.
Roger that. So this works in both directions. That's just with two elements. One square in the front, one square in the back, separated 18 inches, and about $6 or $7 worth of parts. If you felt ambitious and wanted to throw what we call a director in front of that, we'd make it a three-element. Three-element quad jumps up to between 9 to 9.5 dBd, which equates out to 800% of a dipole. Pretty awesome. Three elements, I'll bet you that would cost another at least $2, maybe even three. Back to you, Mike, real quick.
Again, mentioning that it's bidirectional. In other words, we get the gain on receive and transmit. And the cost of a linear amplifier to give you that gain plus a preamplifier to give you that much gain on the receive, which basically only amplifies your noise sometimes. I think that's a bargain.
Roger that. That's why we talk a lot about antennas here. And a whole lot, a little bit of antenna is worth a whole lot of signal. So, and just for anybody who's listening out there, if we have four elements, and Mike, I'd have to say it's probably going to get up to almost $10 to make that antenna. With four elements, you get about 10.5 dB, which is about a 1,120% over the dipole. Pretty awesome. After four to five elements, the gain is typical of a Yagi. So it really, they beat out the Yagi up to that point, and after that, Yagis become a little bit more favorable only because of the fact they're going to be a little bit easier to function and to build, and basically, you know, you're not going to get any difference out there. So anyway, pretty awesome, I'd say. Four element, 10.5 dB gain, and I think that's a little conservative, which is over 1,100% of a dipole or a J-pole. So if you have a J-pole out there, you really want to crank it up. $10 worth of materials guess what? Back to you, Mike.
We're going to find a way to rotate it, but people have been known to do that with ropes and things like that to get them going. So, yeah, that's the way to go, and anybody that can put a couple of pieces of PVC together can make one of these turkeys.
KF6ZG. KF6Q here with Tech Tuesday on the Big Bear Amateur Repeater. AF6CJ, go ahead, guy.
Wow, Mr. Miracle Antenna Builder, where can I buy this or find the plans for this antenna here and my extra set of Ginzu safe knives?
But wait, there's more. It slices, it dices, and comes with if you call right now. No, anyway... this is pretty awesome. These are not fictitious figures. These are mathematically based figures that are realistic. They're not advertised gains by some manufacturer. This is the real deal. So, like I said, the quad is a directional antenna. Definitely, if you're in the outskirts of the repeater, huge difference of what you're going to get. Especially if, say, you're in Landers, you want to point it towards Big Bear, because you're going to hit the Big Bear repeater, and you want about 1,000% gain of what you have right now. If you've got a J-pole, this would be it. If you're in Rosamond, same way. So, anyway, here comes another neat little twist of that. And, Mike, we're going to talk about taking just the loop, just the driven element loop, and putting two of those, one above the other, and feeding both of them. What would be your guess on the advantages of that, real quick?
Let's see here. Now, with my advanced knowledge, hi, of stacking Yagis, which we've done, I would say that if these have better performance than a Yagi, stacking them would give us pretty good gain. And real quick, Guy, the zebra jockey out there, just type in on Google the 2-meter, 2-element quad, and there's a nice article by K4 Mike Gulf on there. A little bit fancier than what I built, but it gives you the basic ideas, so you might be wanting to take a look at that. Okay, Tom, well, back to you. I think you've got some information on stacking those quads.
Yeah, Roger that. If anybody's interested, let me know at the end of Tech Tuesday. I have a couple of neat links to websites, also there, Mike and Guy, that actually have calculators. You literally type in your frequency, let's say in this case 146.5 for national simplex, or 146.520. Or if you wanted to focus just on the Big Bear repeater, 147.330. Actually, 930 is what you're going to be transmitting on. But anyway, either way, they're very wide banded, by the way, so any of those frequencies will all work for the same. And these calculators, you simply just tell you everything you need to know. So, like I said, we'll talk about that later on. Well, anyway, if we stack one on top of the other and we feed them, actually in parallel, let's see, what did you say there? It's 100 ohms for one loop. So if we put 200 ohms in parallel, what do we get?
Gee, let me calculate that out. I think that'll be 50 ohms, won't it?
You're roger that, of course. Yeah, simple math, and that's why you could actually stack one loop above the other loop. Now, just as the numbers go here, that would be called a collinear function, stacking them in line above each other. Now, what it'll do is jump you up about 3 dB, and that's with a separation of one wavelength. So, in other words, from the center of one loop to the center of the other loop vertically, got to be about 2 meters apart, which is about 6 feet. And your net gain there with those two loops, which will actually be good for, like, say, pointed north and south or east and west, both, depending on which direction you point it in, is about 300%, 5 dBd. Pretty awesome. Two chunks of wire.
A little bit of PVC.
Roger that. And it is acceptable to take one of those loops and spin it 90 degrees with respect to the horizon. Now you get kind of back to omnidirectional again, point one north and south, and point the other one east and west, and you're still going to add the gain, but now not quite as much because you're splitting that up a little bit. But now you have a very high gain, very simple antenna. It's about 6 feet tall, and you don't need a rotator or ropes or anything to twist it. What do you think of that there, Mr. Mike?
Well, I think stacking four of them would give us pretty darn close to omnidirectional and with gain, too. That's cool.
Roger that. Well, I would say if I wanted to do, you know, something like that, yeah, you could actually, the sky is the limit, literally. And there's a lot of things that can be done with just quads in two different directions, say if you're primarily focused towards the west or in the same direction. It would be pretty awesome of what can be done. And the key point here is cost. Yes, if you go out and buy this from a commercial antenna retailer, you're going to pay a pretty penny. But, no, it's very easily to do. We'll be happy to give you links to any information on that if you email Mike, WB6CLZ at ARRL.net, or myself, KF6Q at ARRL.net. And we'll get back to you as soon as we can. So, all right. Well, I think it's pretty awesome. And, Mike, we didn't get to the Yagis. Maybe next time, eh?
I've got a little piece of a Yagi that I need to rebuild, so I'm waiting for that for personal reasons.
Roger that. Yagis are not much more complicated to build, and we're going to go over that hopefully in a workshop sometime this year. I know it's getting a little bit tougher to get these things together. Anyway, so we're going to talk a little bit. We're going to get a little technical this evening. So, Mike, you ready for this?
I've got my calculator out, and I got a frown on my face, but you're going to guide us through it, so, yeah, we'll be cool.
Roger that. I'd like to just retrospect, back up the truck, or whatever they call it, back to the basic dipole, and if it's a horizontal dipole for HF purposes or a single sideband for 2 meter, or it could be a vertical dipole, Ringo Ranger, there's a little bit of a stacked vertical like a collinear, or even a J-pole, there's a vertical dipole. The waves coming out of that are like a torus or a toroid, and what that is like a donut without the hole in the middle. The hole in the middle is teeny bitty tiny, and that's exactly what it looks like if you were to actually see the electromagnetic radiation that's coming out. Pretty awesome. I would say, Mike, as a kid, did you ever have a magnet and play with a little iron filings thing or do that little experiment in school?
It would amaze you how much actual metallic material are in the orange groves in the Anaheim area. Yes, I have.
Yeah, roger that. Well, if you were to take a little small magnet, north-south pole, north pole, south pole, like a bar magnet, and I think this is one of the basic science things that's taught, I think, in junior high, maybe even before that, I'm not sure. And you put iron filings on there, and you kind of shake that around on a piece of glass with a magnet underneath. The iron filings will kind of orientate, showing you the magnetic field of the magnet itself. Kind of comes out of the top where the north is or the south. I guess it doesn't really show direction. And it flows in a big, huge, I'm going to say oval, to the south pole. Anyway, if you can't visualize that, hopefully you can find that online someplace. So, but anyway, that is probably the best representation of the magnetic field coming out of a dipole. If the magnet's standing straight on end, it's a vertical like we use right now with our repeater. If it's laying down flat, that's very similar to what comes out of the Carolina Windham, G5RV, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Mike, any comments? Go ahead.
F6 in the Tech Tuesday group. This is WB6CLZ. No, very good analogy. I can see it exactly.
And KF6Q here on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater, Tech Tuesday. And hopefully a warmer Tech Tuesday next Tuesday. It's very, very cold outside. All right. Well, that's kind of like how the magnetic waves come out of your antenna. It's probably about the best representation that you'll ever see physically. So we don't have those magic electromagnetic goggles out yet. Now, real quick there, you were saying that the loop was 100 ohms. And I know that a dipole is something like about 70 or 73 ohms, and an inverted V is like 50 or 60 ohms. What does that mean, Mike?
Well, that to me would tell me that that's the characteristic impedance at the feed point where you're going to feed the antenna, where the wires from the antenna radiators come together.
And that's true. And that's actually, when you say impedance, that is the resistive portion. And it also includes the reactive portion. Real quick, without getting too technical, everything in electricity is either resistive or capacitive or inductive, and or a combination of that together. So, well, anyway, at our tuned frequency, our special little frequency we designed the antenna around, what happens with the reactance part of that impedance?
That would depend on whether the length of the radiator is longer or shorter or directly on frequency, I would think. But I would think that the reactance, you should try to balance out the, or cancel out the reactance with the impedance and make it purely resistive. Am I going the right way?
I'm proud of you, Mike. Yes, actually, impedance is a combination of pure resistance and one of the two, reactance of capacitive reactance or inductive reactance, is one cancels the other. And so if one does cancel the other, it's pure resistance. Basically, what's an example in common AC work about pure resistance, Mike?
Well, those darn heaters that you plug in and they use up so much of your, run your electric bill so high, that's a pure resistance to me.
Yeah, roger that. And actually, it does have a reactive component to it, but at AC frequencies, the household current, it's negligible as far as what we're going to worry about. But at the RF frequencies, of course, everything comes into play. And, right, now you were saying the magic words there. At the specific tuned frequency, now we're going to build that loop, or we built that loop for a specific frequency, and the resistance is 100 ohms, and the reactance at that one specific frequency is zero, because it's all canceled out. There's no inductance or capacitance. Whatever is there is equal to zero. And that's what we look for on that meter, correct?
On one of those antenna analyzers, we try to tune it for the dip and for the zero.
Right. So when it shows that the reactance or the X is zero or close as possible, most analyzers are reasonable pieces of equipment for what they cost. So, but if you can get it within a few ohms, that's perfectly fine. And that would be your tuned frequency. And anyway, at that point, you have this resistance. Now, this 100-ohm resistance, it's resistance. What's it do, Mike? I mean, I know I have resistance in my 100-watt light bulb, and I get 100 watts of light. But I don't get any light out of the resistance. What happens there? Not anyway with the antenna.
Well, if you don't get any light, then, and if it's not being radiated because the resistance is zero, I mean, then you build up I squared R losses and it comes out as heat.
That's true, partially true. Okay. The resistance is 100 ohms, but the reactance is zero. Two different things. That's like the apples and peaches. So anyway, the resistance of 100 ohms is what we have the equivalent of energy that would go through a standard load to create this electromagnetic waves. Now, there's a mouthful. Just for anybody who was not present last week, the electromagnetic waves, those magnetic fields of force, basically that's what you're seeing with that little magnet and the little iron filings on the glass. That's the same thing. Those are electromagnetic fields of force. With radio waves, we're reversing the field many times a second. In the case of our repeater, about 147 million times a second, a little bit better than that, pretty quick. But anyway, that R is basically the load in the circuit. And that energy right there is turned into the electromagnetic waves, and now you're transmitting.
Hopefully those waves are going out into the ether at an angle that you can communicate with somebody with.
Well, if you picture that torus or toroid again, and you have a vertical antenna, essentially the donut would be sitting flat and circled around your vertical radiator, and that is where those lines of force go out. How far they go out is basically a function of how much power you have into that 100 ohms. When you stack these things, then you're going to get more antenna doing the same thing. So you're going to get out there a little bit further. You're going to recreate more of an energy field. And that's about as simple as we can do for RF radiation and how antennas work.
Simplified and easy to understand.
Roger that. Now, I mean, that's a whole mouthful and a lot of that stuff. And essentially, just picture that toroid and that magnetic field, and just picture if you had that little magnet underneath that glass, and you're turning it end for end 147 million times a second, well, which would be almost impossible to do. But that's what we're doing when we're creating radio waves and we're transmitting. And, of course, on the other end, we have antennas that are sensitive to that and pick that energy up. So, anyway, that's pretty much it in a nutshell. And, like I said, we're going to try to deal with some of the other antennas as we move along into the other workshops. But I think the gain versus the dipole, I'm going to go over that one more time, Mike, for the people out there.
Go over it one more time for this person out there, too. Okay, Tom, back to you.
Okay, Roger that, KF6Q with Tech Tuesday Group. All right, all of you people that have a J-pole, that's fantastic. That's a good antenna. Yeah, it's a very cheap antenna. It's omnidirectional and all that good stuff. Moving up to a quad or a Yagi, which is going to have more gain, they both do, the gain, which is going to increase your signal. In the case of just a two-element quad, that's two loops, you're going to be approximately 7.5 times, or 7.5 dB, or 500% of the signal you're going to get with just a J-pole, which is a dipole. So something to think about, especially if you're not concerned about directionality. Well, we had another answer for that, and that's actually stacking them. And with a few more dollars, or as they say, a fistful of dollars more, or a few dollars more, we're sounding like a Clint Eastwood movie now. You know, there you go. And we're going to try to do more on these and actually do more in the workshops with more elements. Back to you, Mike, real quick.
Roger that. I think when we get to the four-element quad, that's probably what I'm going to put up in the air.
Yeah, Roger that. Now, you're saying you had the two-element was about 18 inches, and we're going to say that we're going to add another 3 feet to that for two more elements, and we'd be pretty close. So, in essence, we would be under 5 feet long, basically 20.5 inches square as far as its physical size, and that four-element was it's over 1,120%. That's just huge. 10.5 dB plus of the J-pole. not an isotropic. And imagine it. This is 10.5 dBs better than that J-pole, over that J-pole. So approximate estimate of cost would be between $10 and $15. Back to you, Mike, real quick.
Just for a reference, I know the least expensive commercially made quad, a two-element quad, I have seen is $39.99.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's. I mean, obviously, they're going to make money. They're not going to do it for free. So that's the one part we did not discuss, is this takes a little labor to put this thing together. And if you're good with stuff like that, wouldn't take that much. Very good for direction finding. This quad can be actually built to be what we call knocked down and stored flat. Pretty neat to do. And in that fashion, it could be stored away, brought out when needed for a fox hunt, tea hunt, thing like that. Or if you're trying to locate that mysterious transmitter out there someplace. Back to you, Mike.
Spring and summer is coming up, and hopefully we will schedule a couple of tea hunts. So that's a good idea to get ready in the winter when you're sitting by the fire, and turn the TV off and make yourself a quad.
Or watch the beginning of the baseball series, whichever. Okay, anyway. All right, well, anyway, trying to keep that fairly simple, a little theory behind it, and a little bit of numbers there about what they do and why they do it. As we have said in the past, all antennas will work, especially if you've got a tuner, and it's just a matter of space, time, and money. And in this case, some of these home-built antennas are really not a lot of money. And that's what we're trying to do with these workshops, is help anybody out there to learn how to put these together. I know we didn't actually assemble one there in front of anybody this last time, but hopefully on the next workshop we're going to actually physically from scratch build maybe a three or four element. So any questions out there and any suggestions, please come back.
ZJ?
AF6ZJ. Guy, go ahead. KF6Q.
Well, you know, I had to jump in here sometime. Hey, there's something that actually, this is more of a comment. There's a thing on YouTube. You guys, I don't know if you've already seen it already, but it's worth checking out. There's a gal, Diana Ng. She demonstrates and explains a Yagi antenna, and part of her demonstration, she uses a little light bulb and everything, where she has a Yagi set up and everything, and she basically assembles it, and she rotates it. She moves the light bulb different positions and everything, and it actually lights up and everything around the radiating element and everything, but nothing on the backside and everything for the reflective element. But then she holds it way out in front and everything, in front of a driven element. And just something for you guys to check out. That's Diana Ying and a Yagi antenna for HF backpacking.
Okay, Guy, well, appreciate that, and all the listeners out there. Also, we actually are going to be delving into transmission lines, which is another thing there, too. That's one thing we did not do with Mike's quad, is match it up. I mean, we matched it up with a little, what they call, shunt tuning stub, inductive, and a little capacitor trimmer. There are other ways. We're going to get into that possibly next week on actually transmission lines and balancing this stuff and what they do. So, also, I have available, I haven't converted them yet, I have about three or four, they're in the .mov fashion, little videos, and they are video demonstrations. I do believe they're animated, of basically what a matched antenna and a mismatched antenna resemble, what happens on the transmission line. So I'm going to try to get those converted over to an AVI file, but just something that will play on my computer. And all this information that we have here is upcoming. Will be on our website. Looking forward to getting that going so that it'll be a good reference point for everybody out there. Any other questions or suggestions out there, please come back. KF6Q with the Tech Tuesday group.
86PL.
86PL. Howard, how are you?
Harold, H-A-R-O-L-D. Yeah, I want to ask Mike a question on that sky loop he put up. What were you feeding that with? How were you feeding it?
Well, real quick, are you talking about the Yagi that we were just talking about, or my 160-meter loop?
Monster loop you put up for 160, what, 400-some foot of wire. What were you using to feed that with? How were you feeding it?
At this point in time, it's being fed with 30 feet of ladder line, 450-ohm ladder line. That will be kind of pruned to the right frequency. It's just kind of up there, and it's working, so I've got it done. That's 420 feet. We're going to add another 110 feet, which will make it resonant for a lot more frequencies than what it is now. But we're feeding it with ladder line, Harold. 86PL, WB6CLZ.
Okay, thank you. The reason I ask, I told a guy about it, and because he's into that kind of thing. There's out in La Cunada, and apparently they don't have any restrictions on what you can do out there. He's got more copper up in the air than Dodge Phelps is able to put out, but he was interested. He wanted to know how you bet it, so I'll give him the information whenever I talk to him on another repeater later on. Thank you. 86PL.
I might want to comment on this, Harold, but then it goes into a 4-to-1 ballon and then right into the tuner. You just about have to have a tuner to make it work on anything except 75 at the length I have. Then it goes into the tuner rig and it works very well. I've been having very good luck with that. Tom, do you want any comments? Do you have any comments for Harold? KF6Q, WB6CLZ with the Tech Tuesday Group.
Yeah, 86PL, Harold. There you go. I got it right, Harold. Sorry. Finally. A couple little comments. And one thing is that ladder line that he's got there is basically a chunk he had sitting around. It has not been cut to length, and it is definitely needs to be trimmed to a better length to simply maximize that. If he did, and when we do, what it will do is greatly relieve the stress on the tuner. It is possible to get these to the point where they will almost work without a tuner. So but if you have a tuner, that's great. It will work without a tuner. Mike's won't work without a tuner because Mike's isn't finished yet. Right, Mike?
Roger that. Got a little bit of work to do. Got to extend that wire and kind of play around with the ladder line. Yep, it's just I'm happy with it now. Okay, back to you, Tom.
Roger that. So, and he was equally happy with his ZS6 BKW, which was also a very good antenna. However, Mike does have the space for a loop. He's now like a kid in the candy store next door to the other candy store he was in before. All right. Anyway, anybody else out there, any questions, suggestions, or comments, please come now. All right, Mike, I think we did it again. Either we put him to sleep or we got him totally confused. In awe, as they say. Shock and awe. Well, anyway, we'll be standing by after the net here a little bit in case somebody thinks of anything as important or comes up, or if you have a question that comes up in the next few days or in the next week, feel free to email either Mike or myself, myself at kf6q@arrl.net, or Mike over there at wb6clz and at arrl.net. And we'll get back to you, and we will get you an answer. Just as an FYI, the information that we try to put out here for everybody is pulled mostly from the ARRL website and books. This is all documented stuff. Some of it even goes into some of Maxwell's equations. We're not going to get into the too technical part. We try to keep it fairly simple, but all of this stuff is verified before we ever get out here and say anything. Other than the fact when I stated there was no such thing as a monopole, and I once again apologize for that, as that is exactly what another name for a ground plane, so my mistake. Anyway, any other comments? One more time there. Mike, you want to say anything out there before we close the net? KF6Q.
Oh, yeah, when Tom says it's verified. sometimes I come up with a boo-boo or two, but Tom will always correct that. So there's my disclaimer, guys. No Hibby 6 seals it.
Roger that. Well, I throw out a lot of stuff at Mike out there, and sometimes I give him a warning, and sometimes I don't. So don't think I gave him a lot of warning this time. But anyway, very interesting things about radiation resistance, which is what that R value is. And we have that, with, like I said, with a dipole, 70 ohms, 70, 73 ohms with a flat-top dipole. And essentially that's the result of the electrons traveling in your antenna creating that electromagnetic wave, which is your RF signal, which is what's getting out there in the air. So that's exactly what it all amounts to. And the main thing is trying to get that all matched up, but that's a whole other topic for a whole other night of matching our transmission lines. So, alrighty. Well, QST, 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 this is Tom Fry, KF6Q, with WB6CLZ, Mike Bodie, on Tech Tuesday here, closing the net at 1,946 minutes, and then returning the repeater to normal use. And we appreciate everybody out there for listening in. Thank you much. KF6Q.
Good net, guys. AF6ZJ. And if you got a moment, let's talk about making an ugly balun there, a choke balun.
Okay, Roger that. Would you like to know the way it's supposed to be done, or Mike, do you want to tell them how you did it? Sorry, Mike. I'll hand it over to Mike first. He's got one out there, and he can tell you what he built, and I'll tell you what it's supposed to be. And either way, they all work, because we have another gentleman out there. His is not correct, but it works perfectly fine. Go ahead, Mike. WB6CLZ, KF6Q.
Okay, KF6Q, WB6CLZ, with AF6 Zebra Jockey. Yeah, guy. I'll tell you what I did, and it works just fine, but I'm sure it would work better. I've got this on my ZS6BKW, and basically 20 foot of RG58U. I don't run a lot of power, so I don't need RG8. 50 feet, about 20 feet of that on basically I think it's 3-inch sewer pipe, about probably 10 or 12 inches long, and just as many winds as you can get. The one end goes to your ladder line, and the other end basically is coax, PL259 connector, and goes up and feeds your radio. Okay, Tom, give us the right way to do it.
I say that in jest, Mike. Mike's correct with the length of the coax, and that's the important thing. He has 20 feet. 18 feet will work, so will 16 feet, as 22 feet will also work. If you're going to hang out on the 160 band or the lower bands, lower frequency bands, tend to go with the longer piece of coax, and the length is what is the critical part there. You can wind it on a 3-inch piece of ABS, a 4-inch piece of ABS. You can even put it on 6-inch ABS. Does not matter how many turns. It's the length of the coax. That's the important part. Chris, KI6SKN, good friend of ours, has one he put together with 16-foot. He works 80. I don't think he works any 160, but I think he works 80 up through, I think, 10 meters, and it works fine. There is actually a chart on that. The bandwidth is extremely wide, and it essentially is a one-to-one choke balun, keeps RF from coming back down the outside of the shield. So you just get less of any issues at your transmitter, and it's just gets a good balanced condition there between coax and a matched antenna. Back to you, Guy. AF6ZJ, KF6Q.
Actually, I was waiting for one of you guys to say, yeah, we ordered it from HRO. or something along those lines. Yeah, okay, guys. Yeah, I got you. And as far as the, you know, the purpose of the ballon and everything, the difference of an RF signal and everything traveling through open air versus through shielding or through a wire and everything, and the speed difference and everything. Yeah, I understand, but the ballon is being used to kind of match everything up. Back to you.
Little add on that guy is because it's 80 meters or getting to these long wavelengths, that's why this is one of the preferred types. There is another thing called a TLT. It's a transmission line transformer, a little wider bandwidth, can actually cost less than the ugly ballon. Depends on what kind of power you're running. If you're going to do a TLT, it'll and you're going to run full legal limit, 1,500 watts, it'll probably run you about $20 to $22 for a TLT, but you're also going to have RG8U or something also for your ugly balance, so that's going to cost you $1 a foot, so there's about $20 or $22 there. So it gets to be pretty much a match or a flip there. However, if you're only going to be running, say, between 100 to 300 watts max, TLT is actually cheaper and smaller. And actually, I don't think it's any more difficult to build. So we're going to get into that later on. But if you actually want that information sooner, I can email it to you, Guy. Back to you.
Okay, Tom and Mike. Hey, appreciate it there, guys. Yeah, no, that sounds pretty good. And let me see. Don't you need to put in like 259s and everything on the ugly ballon too there? That, and I was looking at the 4-to-1 here on the YouTube stuff and everything, and it looks like they're for a 4-to-1. You need to build a toroid or something like that. How did you make yours, Mike? Your 4-to-1 there.
See, I know you get to that. The 4-to-1 is one that Tom happened to pick up at HRO, and we were in a hurry to do it, and that's the story, and I'm sticking to it. I do have a design for a 4-to-1 ballon, and I was going to build that had Tom not had it. And basically, it's you just parallel wires, wrap it around, and connect it to basically like the other ballon, only it's got all the connections and everything. A little bit more difficult to build than an ugly ballon, but still not that bad.
Okay, thanks, you characters. I'll go ahead and let you guys put this thing to bed for the night there, but as usual, enjoy the levity and occasionally even learn something when Tom wasn't hurting my head with all those facts and figures. Anyway, 7-3 to both of you guys there. AF6ZJ, and I'll be cleared.
We got it?
All yours.
Yeah, thanks for the compliment there, Guy. Yeah, there's actually a lot of different ways to skin the cat, as they say, on matching that up. And I'd say the ugly ballon is probably the simplest to build, especially if you have extra coax laying around. Yeah, you can, it's convenient to put, say, an SO239 on the bottom of it so you can disconnect it. And not just have it hanging out there with about 50 or 100 foot of coax going to it. Of course, the opposite end, all you need is a couple of little terminals there, you know, because it's just a ladder line coming down to that point. So, but either way, there's a lot of different other ways to do that too, and we do want to explore all those because they're also important, and some of them actually can open up other doors. It's possible to build a ballon, a TLT, to go from 50-ohm coax to 75-ohm coax. 75's sometimes a better matchup up there with the dipole. You get down to your set, though, you want to flip 75 down to 50. There is a special 1.125-to-1 ballon or something like that, whatever it is, or 1.5-to-1 ballon. And if you don't do that, of course, you have an automatic SWR loss there that you'll never recover. So a lot to this stuff, but we'll get to it. We'll eventually cover all this stuff. KF6Q.
Okay, thanks, Tom.